From the outside looking in, the lives of the Amish look simple, peaceful, even romantic. The horse-drawn carriages, immaculate farms, fine woodwork, and excellent baked goods. For those living in the community, the reality is more complicated. This is Talk of Iowa. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest today grew up Amish. Wayne Rupp is a farmer who spent his childhood on an Amish farm just south of Iowa City. He still lives in the house of his youth and farms his family land, but together he and his wife left the Amish faith nearly 25 years ago. Today we'll talk about what it means to be Amish, the life and the hard work, the faith, and the difficult decision Wayne Rupp and his family made to leave the only life they knew. That's coming up after the news. It's Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Many of us love to visit Amish country. The farms are beautiful. The horses and carriages are quaint. It's refreshing to be away from the constant drone of machinery we hear in cities and on modern farms. It's easy to romanticize what looks like a simple and beautiful way of life. Life within the Amish community is more complicated. It's a life of very hard work and very strict adherence to doctrine. My guest this hour is Wayne Rupp. He grew up in an Amish farming community south of Iowa City. After his marriage, he and his wife chose to leave the faith, but they still live on the farm he grew up on and farm the family land. Wayne, thank you so much for coming into the studio today.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Listen to Stryker Schmidt, the author of A Separate God, Journals of an Amish Girl, was scheduled to be on the show today, but she's sick and will not be able to join us. Wayne, I want to ask you about your story, but first, I want to help people understand the Amish community and faith a little bit. I know that the Amish faith was founded in Europe around 1700 by a man named Jacob Ammon, and it began as a reform movement within the Mennonite Church to go back to the early ways of the Mennonite Church. Some Amish came to the United States in the early 18th century, and there are now many thriving Amish communities across the nation. One of those, of course, is the community that you grew up in. Tell us a little bit about, as you were growing up, what was daily life like on the farm in your community?
Hard work. Like you mentioned, yeah, it was sunrise to sunset and beyond at times.
So when you woke up in the morning, what was the first thing you would do?
Go milk cows.
And from there?
And from there, other chores, and then, of course, depends on the season. You know, there was field work, planting, and then haying during the summer in its cycle, and then fall harvest was a busy time, and then, of course, shovel snow, push snow, and feed cattle, bed cattle, and keep the thing going.
Right, it's pretty much nonstop
work. It was nonstop,
all the time.
Yes.
And, of course, you were working on the farm. Your mother was working in the house during this time.
Right.
And what, I know that you don't know, have intimate knowledge, but what was a woman's day like on the farm?
Food, basically, and it depends on the family size. You know, I had two brothers, one older, one younger, and that took a fair amount of food. So it was preparing, and of course, canning and freezing, and those kind of things. It just, yeah, it was busy.
Certainly. Well, and with as hard as you and your brothers were working all the time, I'm sure you ate a lot.
Yeah, we did.
It's hard to feed a teenage boy who sits and plays video games.
Right.
And you grew up in an unusual family because your father passed away when you were 5 years old.
Right.
So your mother raised you and your brothers. Was that different for you to have a mother who was the head of the household?
Oh, yes. Very different. And I don't know how to explain it in a short order. It was, you felt a lot of support from the neighborhood, from the community as well. And we were fortunate enough to have Grandpa just next door. And that was huge. Made a big difference. And so, yeah, you just take one day at a time and we got through it. I'm not quite sure how, but we did.
Well, the role of men in the Amish community is very much as the leader of the family and the head of the household. Can you tell me a little bit about, as you grew up and were prepared to become the man of a household, what you were taught about your role and the role that your wife would have in your family?
I guess I would, you know, first of all, wouldn't be afraid to say it. Mom did an excellent job. She stepped up. she did what needed to be done. And yet, you know, now looking back, I do realize some of the things that I didn't pick up, you know, but how could I?
Like what?
Oh, just the importance of that daily presence as a dad, mm-hmm. as a father, as a leader. You know, you just didn't quite see it because you couldn't – there was – the example wasn't there.
Right.
So you can't say, well, I wish my dad would have done this or I wish he wouldn't have done that. Can't do that.
Right.
Don't know.
Right.
It's just not there.
Within the church, is there a lot of division between men and women?
No. No. I mean, they – during church service, they sit separately. But, however, they are – they're close. Yeah. They function as a family, you know, for the most part. There would be some exceptions, but for the large part, they're very much together. It's just – they choose to sit apart during church service. You know, it's just not my choice. That's one thing that I enjoy, you know, having made the change, mm-hmm. Is sitting as a family, you know, representing my family. It's important to me.
Can you tell us a little bit about the doctrines on which the religion is based? Because from the outside, many of us don't understand why the Amish live the way that they do and why they believe that that's what God wants them to do.
Well, I guess, first of all, in the opening, you mentioned about, you know, leaving the Amish faith. I guess mm-hmm. I would like to word that just a little bit different.
Sure.
It's the same faith, but it's a different lifestyle.
Okay.
So I would word it, we left that lifestyle and chose a different lifestyle. However, it's Christianity. You know, we believe in a risen Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Very much the same. It's just – you just choose
– It's an interpretation.
It's an interpretation, yes. Yes.
So can you tell me a little bit about the Amish interpretation?
One thing is they would pretty highly discourage pleasure, such as attending ball games, county fair, local carnival, that kind of thing. That would be considered just kind of like a pleasure time. However, they do get together and play volleyball, softball as their own people. But going to and sitting and observing and cheering and that kind of thing, it's discouraged, very much so.
Would it be considered to be sinful to do something like that?
Well, yeah, it would be. It would be considered sinful, and the fact of that you're – tendency would be to forget the moment, you know, mm-hmm. the importance of living a quieter lifestyle, I guess, I think is what's kind of the way to put it.
Why do you think the quieter lifestyle is so important?
Well, good question. I just found out part of that just recently, and I'm not quite sure that I can put it quite into I didn't think about this. I should have prepped on this part. But 2 years ago, Pennsylvania is a state where probably the most Amish, the largest population per square mile of any state in the union. And there was two individuals came from, I believe it was France, came to the United States, and they were looking for Amish. And first of all, you know, first thought was, you know, we thought of, you know, like persecution. You know, what are they? You know, what are they going to do? Well, what they brought was information that we didn't know. And what happened was in Europe when the Amish were persecuted, they fled, you know, mm-hmm. as fast as they could. And I believe it's France. Some of them went to France, and they found a very fertile, very agricultural land, mm-hmm. and it's what they wanted, but I guess the locals didn't want to allow them in unless they made a commitment, and that was they're not allowed to share their faith. It's
okay.
It's hush. You don't talk about it. You just mm-hmm. so they made that agreement, and from there is where the Amish would have came to the States as we know it today. So it was kind of that. So they came to release that hush.
Oh, okay.
And wanted them to speak openly about their faith and, you know, make it known abroad, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, that's kind of what, in my growing up years, it was just kind of a, you just didn't talk too much about it.
Even within your households?
Yeah, in a sense, it was that way. You kind of, there was just certain things you just didn't talk about. You just took it and you just kind of grow into it. It's what it seemed like, yeah.
How much contact did you have growing up with people from the outside community?
Well, from the outside, maybe like, I guess, you know, we got the larger Mennonite circle and then what I would consider outside of that. I'm not quite sure where you're – are you talking about the clear outside?
Yes.
Not just a lot. We had as a younger boy at home, we had next door neighbors that we would have considered the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in the same, the oldest son was the same, my age, same class in school, and good friends. I mean, we interacted as neighbors, but we knew there's this difference,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we just didn't talk about those differences. We come together, we played, we interacted, and we were just different, you know. We weren't encouraged to talk about the differences. You just be quiet, be friends, act like neighbors,
right.
And we did. And I would love to see that young man, middle-aged man, I guess I should say now.
And you actually, you went to a public school as a young man.
Yes, kindergarten, first and second grade. Yeah, about three-quarters of a mile from our house. Country school, public run, what we know as the Mid-Prairie School District. They mm-hmm. they run the school, and fond memories. I just loved every minute of it.
But why did you stop going to public school? What was the change?
The public system, they closed that school, just shut her down. No more teacher, no more support. So the neighborhood, you know, as the Amish community, chose to go like 1 mile down the road and build their own, and it was the Amish parochial school, and all the kids there were Amish.
Okay.
And the other school, it wasn't. There was a mix.
Is that the way it continues today?
That's the way. Yes.
And how long did you go to school?
8 years.
All right. So you went through the eighth grade.
Yeah.
Which is also.
That's common.
Very common for both men and women.
Yes. Yes.
Well, we're going to talk more in just a couple of minutes about the questions that you started to have as a young man and what led you to leave this community, although, again, not the Christian faith, but the Amish sect.
Right.
We'll talk more about that in a moment. Also, Mary Swander, our poet laureate of Iowa, is going to be with us in just a few minutes. She lives among the Amish, and we'll talk to her about her experiences as well. And we'd like to hear from you. If you have questions for Wayne about the Amish life, or maybe you're someone who also left the community, give us a call. The number is 866-780-9100. You can send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.com. This is Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about the Amish faith and the Amish community here in Iowa. With me today is Wayne Rupp, who grew up in an Amish farming community south of Iowa City. When he got married, he and his wife together chose to leave the Amish and live, they still live in the community, but they chose to worship in a different way. We'll talk with him more about his experiences and what led him to make such a difficult decision. And also joining us now is Mary Swander. Mary is the poet laureate of Iowa, appointed by Governor Culver in 2009. She's joining us by phone from near Kelowna. Mary Swander is a graduate of the Iowa Writers Workshop. She's also a professor of English and a distinguished professor of liberal arts and sciences at Iowa State University, and she has an unusual perspective for an outsider. She lives in an old Amish schoolhouse. Mary, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you. Pleasure.
And Mary, for those who don't know your story, what led you to move to this community?
Well, I had an illness where I could only eat organic food, and this started in 1983, and there was very little, you know, organic food in any store, any farmer's market, anything like that at the time. So I found it, in down near Kelowna with the Amish, and so I started coming down here and going to the greenhouses and struck up some friendships, and the Amish started showing me garden techniques to raise my own food. And then I was driving around here one day on one of these visits, and I saw this old schoolhouse for sale, and I bought it. And you're just talking to Wayne. Hi, Wayne.
Hey, hi, Mary.
Wayne, this is the schoolhouse that Wayne went to as a child, the one I'm sitting in right now. So
you live just up the road.
Yeah, we're neighbors, and we've known each other for years and have a nice, really nice, warm relationship.
So, Mary, when you moved into the community, did you find acceptance?
I think they were pretty... neighbors were a little leery at first. They thought they told me they thought some old hippie was moving in, but it didn't take long for them to. After about a year, people started coming by and they said, you know, they were really happy I was there, and they could tell I wasn't going to be throwing beer cans in the ditch.
So, you know, Wayne and I were just talking about this reserve, the sense of reserve of talking about the way of life. Did you find that as you started to get to know people in the Amish community? Because I know you as a person who likes to ask questions.
Right. I mean, I think there's a reserve when any stranger comes into a new environment. You know, no matter where you are. But, you know, this is a community that has long traditions and roots, and so... I dropped out of the sky, and it has to be weird, you know, for people when something like that happens. But I think that little by little, I gained their trust, and really, we've had such a good relationship. You know, I've been here for a little bit over 20 years.
Well, I want to talk in just a couple of minutes. I want to talk with both of you more about the role of Amish in the greater community and in the greater culture. And we'd also love to hear from you if you have any questions, or if you're someone who's left the Amish community and you'd like to talk to us about your experiences, we'd love to hear it. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Wayne, I want to get back to your experience as a teenager in the Amish community. What led you to start questioning your way of life?
Well, first of all, I guess, you know, there's a difference in machinery that you use on the farm, transportation. You know, you kind of look at more luxury, you know. So I would be first to admit, you know, that pulled. I mean, you kind of, you know, run the Kelowna, you know, 4.5 miles. Well, with a horse and buggy, you figure 20, 25 minutes. You jump in the truck today and
five minutes, you're there.
You know, so those kind of the conveniences.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can only imagine that harvesting corn must have been one of those moments where you thought, this is incredible back-breaking work for us, and it looks a lot easier next door.
Yes, yeah. So that was part of, I mean, so those things you thought of, you know, you were thinking as you were growing up, and had a chance to go help farmers, neighbors that had, bigger tractors, tires, you know, rubber tires on their equipment, and just kind of decided, you know, that's probably the right move. Mm-hmm. But however, spiritually was the biggest concern. And that's kind of because of that came the day when the decision was made. I mean, black and white. This, we're going to make mm-hmm. the change. And it was more on the spiritual side of it than it was the convenience side
okay.
of it.
So what, if I can ask you, what led you to start asking those questions spiritually?
Well, I guess, as a believer, I believe in freedom within knowing your personal Savior. And where I grew up in, it was there, but it wasn't encouraged. And I didn't like that. I like to hear somebody that is got that relationship. It's not just because of, you know, I dress so-so and then I'm okay, or mm-hmm. or I ride in the right vehicle most of the time, or that kind of thing. You know, that was pretty important to me, and it still is.
I might add, in the development of the Amish faith, they were actually based upon, way back when, it was based upon the Benedictine monks and in the Catholic Church. And so the wider Mennonite community would be like the Catholic Church, but the Amish were, you know, living apart from the world in a, you know, in a much more cloistered way. They weren't celibate, of course. They could have families. Mm-hmm. But that, when I read about that history, I thought, oh, that, you know, that provides a context that I can really understand. And so, you know, somebody moves away from the Amish community but into the wider Mennonite community, it's that kind of a movement, as if you had been cloistered and then were moving out into a little bit more worldly.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That does put it in perspective. Wayne, within the Amish community, if someone does things that are outside of the sort of the order of things, what is the reaction within the community? Because there can be fairly strict punishments for that.
Oh, yes, yes. It kind of is usually accepted based on previous, you know, like if somebody left the Amish with kind of an arrogant attitude and then does something that's we would call questionable, uh-huh. it really puts a stir in the community. But if they left in a more of a, you know, a friendlier atmosphere, then it isn't quite that shake.
Okay.
Is kind of the way I would the way I see it.
I think probably all of us have heard about shunning, which is something that can happen.
Yes.
When someone chooses to leave the community or does something that is considered to be very sinful within the community. Are there lesser forms of, for lack of a better term, punishment if somebody, quote, misbehaves in a smaller way?
Yes. Kind of what Mary said, she mentioned the Catholic, mm-hmm. and I would probably want to inject that right here, is now looking back and kind of observing from Catholic to Amish, if I could,
uh-huh.
I think, you know, in the Mennonite faith, the Amish are probably the most like the Catholic of any, okay. any level or whatever you call it of the Mennonite faith. And that is simply the church leaders run the show.
Mm-hmm. Have a lot of power.
Yeah. You don't make a confession in church without the bishop in charge and making sure that it's done in the right order.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the church we attend, it's a heart issue. It's a personal heart issue. You take care of that. And then the church leaders are there to help you, you know, overcome or work through it. You know, so that's kind of like Mary mentioned, the Catholic, you kind of see that.
I think that gives us a more perspective on what it's like. We are going to take a break for some news here. And when we come back, I want to ask you about when you made that decision to leave and what that was like for both you and your wife and what's life been like since. And Mary, we're going to talk more about your experiences in the community and also the role of the Amish in the greater community. We'd like to hear from you as well with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. If you have questions for Wayne or Mary about the Amish community, or if you have some experiences you'd like to share, we would love to hear from you. You're listening to Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. You're listening to Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about the Amish. With me in the studio today is Wayne Ropp. He grew up in an Amish farming community south of Iowa City. After his marriage, he and his wife chose to leave the Amish community or the Amish sect, but they still live on the farm he grew up on, and they farm the family land. And also with us on the phone today is Mary Swander. She is the poet laureate of Iowa. She's also a professor of English at Iowa State University, and she has an unusual connection with the Amish community because she lives in an Amish schoolhouse near Kelowna. Thank you both again for being here today. Wayne, I want to ask you more about the decision that you made before leaving the church, but First, we have an email that someone sent in with a question that I'm sure you can answer. This is somebody who lived for many years in Germany and speaks fluent German. They went to an Amish grocery store in Kelowna and heard them speaking a form of German and tried to join in, but they reacted really strangely. So they want to know, what is the language that the Amish speak, and why wouldn't they want to talk to someone, an outsider, in German?
Typically, it's for the Germany German is, we call it High German.
Okay.
And the States German is considered Pennsylvania Dutch. It's very, very different, or it can be very different.
Okay, so it's a dialect.
I had a friend, a real close friend, that moved to Germany, and he came back to visit and brought his fiancée along. And boy, she talked German, but you had to really pay attention to understand. And it's easy to withdraw because it almost sounds like Spanish. I mean, it's so different.
Okay, yeah. So it probably wasn't like they didn't want to speak to an outsider in German. They probably just didn't understand.
Just didn't understand because right. You've really got to – and, you know, another language always sounds fast.
Mm-hmm.
So if that German comes comes down the pike, it sounds like just rattling, and you just pick up here and there and you try to connect the dots, and it's tough. It's tough. It really is.
All right. Well, let us know if you have a question at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also call us at 866-780-9100, or you can tweet us at IPRTalk. Now, Wayne, you and your wife together chose to leave. What led to that decision?
Like I mentioned earlier, some of it was kind of the convenience was part of it. But then there was an incident in church that happened, and I said, I don't want to be a part of this. And it was kind of building up to it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just said, before I get irate and really rattle the cage, I think it's better we just leave quietly and continue to be friends.
I'm sure that was a very personal moment. Would you be comfortable telling us about what
happened? Well, maybe I could just back up a little bit. Earlier I mentioned about the Catholic. I've got a lot of real fine Catholic friends and nothing against them at all. I mean, I didn't try to go there at all. It's just the way they function, their church.
The power structure
kind of
within
the
church.
The priest and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. And the Amish or the bishop, that kind of thing. That's kind of what I was referring to. And that's where – that was probably the thing that really I really struggled with. It was just you saw and you felt that power, you know. And you know, when you're in authority, and the more power you can throw, the more submission you're going to get. And I didn't feel it was in the, you know, allowing the Holy Spirit to work. It was my way, this mm-hmm. way. Or else.
So in a way, it was your spirituality, your faith, that led you to question your way of life.
Yeah. Oh, very much so. Very much so.
And did your wife feel the same way?
Yes. Yes. And we talked a lot. We talked for hours about this thing. I mean, it wasn't just get up in the morning and say, click, you know. We were concerned about the decision, and we wanted it to be the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
And today, we feel that was the right decision.
When you decided to marry, it seems like that was probably a moment where you had accepted your way of life. You decided to marry within the community and probably at that moment thought that this is what your future held. Did
yes.
you know that your wife also had questions before you got married?
Yes. Yes, I did. But I didn't realize it was quite to that extent.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was kind of there. But once you're together 24/7, you learn to know your mate,
right.
And that's kind of what it. All of a sudden, I realized, you know what, she's in the same spot I am, you know, and so we talked about it, and because of that particular situation, and it did involve the shunning,
okay,
thing, and I think there's room for it, but it really got misused.
So when you and your wife decided to leave the sect, were you afraid that you would be shunned?
No.
Okay.
No.
Why?
Well, it would be, I guess you might say, because I didn't feel we weren't trying to show our authority.
Okay. You weren't challenging the authority of the church.
We just chose to back off and I told the bishop, I said, we have differences. We have differences. And, you know, and he acknowledged it. Yes, we have differences. You know, can we kind of like, you know, go apart and be friends? And yes. And that was kind of the agreement.
Okay.
And, you know.
Was the bishop the first person you told?
No.
No.
No, parents.
Okay.
Parents were the first. Yeah. The bishop was kind of pretty normal for them to come then, like, after they sense the decision.
Right.
They kind of come to make, you know, try to, you know, you could call it restitution or you could to connect, that kind of thing, you know, pretty common for that. And, you know, we're still good friends. We talk every chance we have, and I love the man. It's, you know, but it's just, that's where we were.
You were raised, we mentioned earlier that your father passed away when you were young, so you were raised by your mother. What was it like to tell your mom?
It was a tense moment, you know, it really was. But yet I felt we were old enough to make the decision, and we just kind of went from there. I mean, my plans weren't to, you know, just to like, you know, outwardly change overnight. I mean, if at one point we would have felt this isn't right, we wanted the bridge there to come back,
right.
You know, is what we wanted.
How did your life change after you made that decision?
Well, you probably get a better answer from my siblings. I don't know. I felt it. It was a gradual thing. You kind of start thinking different, and you have a clear different atmosphere in church, where you can share more openly your heart than where I grew up in. It was just kind of a box, and you just kind of operated within that box. And if there was some deep hurts, it wasn't common to share those. You just kind of tried to smooth it out and hope it'll go away.
Mm-hmm.
Where today it's much more of a personal, I would consider some very good mentors in the church we attend today. I mean, if I got a hurt, I can go talk. I mean, I know I can. It's and it stays on a personal level, very much so.
When you were looking for a new church, did you find a new church right away, or did you go to several to try to find the one that worked for you?
No, we kind of pretty much had that decided when I had friends attending there. And there was other family there too. So it was just kind of for us, it was kind of like, where else would we go? You know, wasn't really a search thing going on as such.
Right.
It was just kind of new, kind of that's where we were supposed to go. And I don't regret it today. It's been a good journey.
How did you change? Did you start to change the way that you dressed right away?
Oh, within several weeks. Yeah, you kind of in and out. And of course, you know, if you observe the Amish, they wear beards when they're married, you know, so there was a time when mine went, you know, and that was kind of that was a thing that was kind of different, but I don't regret it.
How about adopting modern technology? Did you get a phone right away?
No, we didn't. It was probably all of 2 years.
Wow.
We didn't have a phone, and
I
then brought the phone
that.
In.
Yeah, Mary?
The Amish generally share phones, and they have called phone shacks around in the fields, different places. And the one for this neighborhood was in the next-door neighbor's garage. And so when I first came here, there were six or eight families that all shared that phone, and they would come in their buggies. And as Wayne said, beards and the men and so forth. And then gradually, as he said, over the next couple years, I saw several families make that transition where they no longer came to the phone. They were driving down the road in cars, and you know, I had a little bit different style of dress. And so it was, you know, it was very noticeable to me, at least, because there's a lot less traffic in my front yard, although I enjoyed the traffic.
It is fun traffic. So do you have Amish neighbors who come and use your phone, Mary?
Oh, occasionally. They still have their phone checks, but, you know, like if there's an emergency or something like that. I'll never forget one day there was a guy working in the field right next to my place, and he got attacked by wasps.
And he
you know, got on his horse and galloped up here and pounded on my door, you know, because he needed medical attention. So I've pitched in and helped out in lots of situations like that.
Do you give people rides if they need to go to the hospital?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Does that happen quite a bit?
With some frequency, yeah. I mean, you know, that's the tough thing about being Amish, as Wayne said. If you've got an emergency like that and you just have a horse and buggy and you need to get your child who has pneumonia into the hospital, that's, you know, then you have to depend on your neighbors.
Mary, somebody sent in an email question that I think you can probably answer for us. This is Brian from Cedar Rapids. He wants to know, how often does the Amish community shake their heads and wonder why the trendy, current, eco-friendly, and organic marketing that takes place in the market are just now catching on? If any shaking of heads takes place, it seems that current trends are just what the Amish and Native American communities have been practicing for centuries and generations. Now, of course, the Amish aren't seeing a lot of that marketing material, I wouldn't think. But Mary, what do your neighbors say as they hear about this?
Well, yeah, they do kind of shake their heads because the, you know, one thing they have is great agricultural practices. They know how to rotate crops. They know how to, you know, rehab land that's been spent and used up, and many, many, many practices are just really excellent. And we've moved away from that in the, as they call it, the English culture, and now there's a return to, you know, seeing some of the value of what had been a long tradition and then even advancing it further. So very interesting. In a couple weeks, there's a class from Iowa State University that's in sustainable agriculture, and they're on a tour, and they tour the state looking at all different forms of agriculture. So they're going to come to my house, and then they're going to come to some of the Amish neighbors to look at some of their you know, farms and practices, because it's about the most diverse kind of farm you could find these days. And when I approached my Amish neighbors, they were like, what? They want to come here for what? Why? And I said, well, you know, you're doing something really different, actually, now than most people. Well, because we don't have 6,000 hogs crammed into one shed? I'm like, right.
Right. Wayne, this is a question also from Brian that I think you can answer, which is, why are the Amish not permitted to have their picture taken with a frontal view or in close-up?
Oh, boy. I kind of had the same question, I guess, still.
Okay.
But the way we were told growing up was, in doing that, you are kind of like offering yourself to the media, or your identity is kind of like being used,
okay,
or possibly. So you just don't go there. Don't allow it, you know. So
it was primarily because they thought outsiders would use those images.
Yes.
Okay.
And they do too, and
sure.
And you know, I've heard so many stories, especially with Amish children. People drive by, shooting their pointing their cameras out the window. Oh, look at the cute little Amish kid! You know, I mean, it really objectifies them.
Yeah.
And, you know, Native Americans have the same kind of taboo, and their take on it is it takes the spirit away when somebody does that, takes their photo.
Wayne, you have 4 children. And you raised your children in your new faith and your new community. What is that like to have kids who have grown up so differently from how you grew up?
It's somewhat a challenge, but and yet it's also it has its rewards, because some of the things that I kind of long for as a 14, 16, 18-year-old. I can now see my children doing that. But I would also admit that it's maybe just an extent further than what I thought you know, it would have had to been done.
Sure.
You know, it's just part of, you know, youth and that kind of thing. And I guess, too, then with what's interesting in this one email that you talked about the German, you know, see, our children can understand and for the most part speak German and English.
Mm-hmm.
And they have that and don't even realize it. And here, our oldest, I think when she was in middle school, they went to the Spanish class. And then as they left, they were walking down the hall and her friends were, you know, they were talking about this. Oh, this is going to be so tough. And my daughter says, but that would be kind of neat to talk two languages, wouldn't it? And her classmates looked at her like, well, you can. She says, no, I can't talk Spanish. Well, you can speak German. Oh, I never thought of that. So it was just a kind of a natural thing that came.
Right, you know, something she just took for granted.
She took for granted, yeah. So, yeah, they can understand every word. They struggle speaking some of it.
Yeah.
But they're totally bilingual in their comprehension. And Wayne's daughter, Andra, told me that, you know, it seemed like one language to her, going back and forth in English and Dutch. As he's describing, it didn't seem like she was speaking two different languages.
Right.
It was all seamless.
Well, Mary, what do you think the impact is of the strong Amish community that we have here in Iowa, south of Iowa City? What do you think the impact of that community is on the greater community?
Well, it's a very enriching part of the state. It, you know, adds a lot of diversity, and as I said, it serves as an example of how you can live ecologically and spiritually, and for the rest of us. I mean, there are lots of lessons to be given here, to be learned.
Can you give me some examples?
Well, one of the things we haven't talked about, but the Amish Mennonite community, they're a peace church. They're you know, based on nonviolent resistance, and so you know, they have a completely different take on you know, just the concept of war and aggression. That, you know, I think we would be well served to listen to in some of our dealings with international affairs. So you know, you think that of I think the English world has this idea that they're a little isolated community, but these people have done service work all over the map. They're very savvy about what's going on. You know, they're really astute in terms of international relations.
Wayne, what do you want people to know about the Amish community? Because it's obviously a community that is not very well understood from the outside. And clearly, although you chose to leave it, it's a community that you have a lot of affection for.
Yes, very much so. I guess in a few words, I'm not quite sure what those are, but I'm just trying to gather them real quick here, is I think the outside people need to understand that they are trustworthy. They're trustworthy. They're not a off-the-wall business person. They truly do business the traditional way. I mean, you know, it's you know, I've had feed salesmen stop in from a distance and ask about, well, how do you approach them? I said, their heart beats just like mine. they talk just like I do. Go talk to them. You know, it's that simple. I mean, yeah, they live different, but however they are American citizens,
right?
Very much so.
Well, clearly, you know, there are lots of questions that outsiders have about the Amish community. Have you seen animosity? Do you think there's any animosity?
Very little. And sad to say, probably most of it comes from within the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the way the community that I grew up in, we kind of have several of these country stores, country greenhouses, that kind of thing. So we get a lot of, you know, 5-6 counties out traffic.
Sure.
And very respectable. Very, I mean, could complain. I mean, very nice people.
But I suppose that the Amish community has to feel somewhat threatened because they're small, and the rest of the world is a lot bigger.
No, I don't think
no?
so.
Okay.
No, I think they've been successful, not just for a decade, but longer. You know, so I think they're pretty comfortable.
And Mary, if there was one thing that you've learned about these people that you want other people to know, what would it be?
Oh, they're a lot of fun. Yeah.
Well, and that is certainly not the impression that one would get.
Yeah, no. I mean, people think, oh, they dress in black and they're very dour and, you know, and they're so strict with their children and all this. Really, I've had so many good times down here interacting with the neighbors. We're having a neighborhood picnic tonight. I'm really looking forward to it. I never
Absolutely.
Want to miss that. Yeah.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, Mary Swander, Poet Laureate of Iowa and Professor of Liberal Arts and Sciences at Iowa State University. Thank you, Mary, for joining us today.
Thank you, Charity.
And Wayne Rapp, a farmer south of Iowa City. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. I know that was probably a difficult decision to make to come and talk about it.
It was, but I've enjoyed it.
Good. Well, thank you so much for being open and helping all of us understand a little bit better. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. I'm Charity Nebbe. And tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, we're going to talk about RAGBRAI as it gets ready to roll across the state. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.